Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
1-1 pitch. Fastball pulled and passed. Alvarez in toward the corner.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball at cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Adam, Scott, Heath, and Chris.
Pedro Severino, triple dongs. Two other players, double dong last night. Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Today. We're going to recap all the Tuesday action and try to grade some trades as well. Your email's at fantasybaseball at cbsi.com. I'm Adam Azer. Chris Towers is back after ditching me yesterday. What's up with that, Chris?
I don't think I ditched.
Yeah, exactly what happened.
I had a doctor's appointment that I had been putting off for,
in quotes,
like a month. I think my original appointment was like May 10th. And so I finally reached the point where I would have either had to go or find a new doc.
Are you okay? Are you okay?
Yeah, it was just, just go to the doctor sometime.
Sure, fair enough.
Do you, though?
When it's only Adam and Chris on this show, of course.
So I should, too?
I mean, I'm not a doctor.
You can't tell me that I should?
I can't answer that question, unfortunately.
I can. Good. You should. Yes, you should. Okay, Andrew McCutchen's out for the season. Jay Bruce, I forgot, he double-donged, too. That's three doubles and one triple-dong from last night. How about that? We'll talk about the Phillies situation, who might be replacing Andrew McCutchen, and who you could add as a replacement if you need an outfielder. It is, of course, Worryometer Wednesday, and Paul DeJong is in a brutal slump right now. He'll be on. He's three for his last 40. We'll talk about him. We'll talk about Blake Snell, Noah Syndergaard, Chris Paddock, Max Fried, and a lot more. Let's get to the Tuesday standouts. Let's start with Pedro Severino. Baltimore's catcher, 7% owned. Yesterday, he was the number 21 catcher in fantasy. Now he is the number 16 catcher in fantasy. It wasn't that big of a jump. He doesn't play that much, but he actually had an 835 OPS on Tuesday morning, and now it's a 937 OPS. He's having a pretty good year. He doesn't play as much as a lot of regular catchers, but he does play more. He plays more than any Baltimore catcher, I'll say that. Give me your take on Pedro Severino.
He's a catcher who's doing stuff.
He hit three home runs last night, and I didn't notice until I read the notes this morning.
Are you kidding?
And he's kind of doing stuff. Like, he's fine. He does not play anywhere close to every day, which catchers don't, but he doesn't play as much as the normal catcher. He's played three starts in the last week, I think. What I said in the waiver wire column after your notes alerted me to the fact that he hit three home runs was, at the very least, you could speculate on him in a two-catcher league. But I don't think you're like picking him up thinking, okay, I found my second catcher in a two-catcher league.
I do want to point out, one, I think he's more like a sixth, like where he was ranked 16th. He's ranked 16th now. He was 21st before. I think that's an okay range for him, but that also means that he could be a week away from being the 30th ranked catcher. That's just kind of the deal with that position. But most importantly, I do want to point out that there was a bit of a discussion last night. Scott White was getting some criticism for not being prepared for podcasts, and I think that was a little unfair. And I just want to point out that Heath is usually the one doing the criticism, and here we are. Didn't even know Pedro Severino hit three home runs. Turnabout's only fair play, Heath.
Yeah, I criticize Scott for not knowing about the segments that we do every single week.
No need to defend yourself.
But yeah, I definitely should have known that Pedro, but I did know it before the show started.
No, you didn't.
Yeah. Like, literally, I wrote this before the show started, so obviously I knew it.
But five seconds before the show started, basically.
Right. I don't need more than 5 seconds to process Pedro Severino.
Fair enough. Let's read that critical tweet. Is it no longer available?
I didn't send any
critical tweets.
No, not
yours.
Last night.
Not yours.
No. I wasn't even drinking. There's no chance it was me.
The guy who was ripping us. It was
your burner account.
It was really funny. I don't think it's available anymore. He's like, don't listen to the CBS Fantasy Baseball podcast. They are wrong all the time. Go somewhere else. And that, of course,
and we are wrong all the time. Everyone that talks about this sport is wrong all the time. That's the way this job works.
Not a bad point. Of course, I wrote, this is what happens when two guys on our show say that Butterfinger is good. So I blame Chris and Scott. Okay.
Excuse me. Three of the four people on this show think Old Town Road is bad. So that's really what he's talking about.
It's definitively bad. In fact, we're taking our family to Orlando, and there is a place there called Old Town that has like some...
probably some roads.
Probably.
Yeah.
Like arcade stuff and the car shows, and it's a fun, cheap thing to do when you're not spending $5 million everywhere else. And I was like, I don't know. They're probably going to be playing that song. I don't
probably
going to
have some Wrangler on your booty.
I don't want to go.
All right, guys. So this is why people don't like our show. So Pedro Strop is my next standout. 49% owned. I love it. I mean, he comes off the IL, first appearance in right around a month, and he gets a save for the Cubs. Is this a Hector Neris situation where, hey, we're not sure if he's the closer, but it turns out he's pretty much the closer, and Hector Neris is now owned in like 85% of leagues. Pedro Strop is 49% owned. Does Pedro Strop deserve to be, you know, getting close to that 80% range?
It's hard to say after one outing, but it's a very good sign for Pedro Strop. It was a three-run game. So I don't know how
didn't
much
strike anybody out.
I actually don't know how much we can take away from it. I'm trying to see who was coming up for the Rockies.
He pitched.
It was
he got
something
most
like the top
of the
lineup.
He's like almost every other closer. He's must own in a categories league, and you probably don't need him in a points league.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing. Like, if he's the closer for the Cubs, then you do need him in a points league. You know. If he's going to get 85% of the saves for the Cubs, then you need him in a points league. You know,
maybe.
Like if you're a Luke Jackson owner, there's a good chance Craig Kimbrell is going to get signed by the Braves. There's a decent chance he gets signed by the Cubs, I guess. But, you know, if you are nervous about your closer situation, keep an eye on Pedro Strop. My next standout, my last one, I'll turn it over to you guys. Then we'll talk about McCutcheon in just a bit, is Pablo Lopez. Just so much inconsistency, but when he's good, he's really good. This was at Milwaukee. The mighty Marlins won 16-0. Lopez, six shutout innings with seven strikeouts. He still has a 4.52 ERA, but I'm sure there's a lot of stuff we like about Pablo Lopez, and he's only 38% owned. Made his first of two starts this week. He gets Pittsburgh next week. Who's excited about Pablo Lopez? Gonna take my horse to the Old Town Road. All right, sorry.
No, it's awful. You know that I did put Pablo Cito in the waiver wire column. He is so much fun to watch. Control has been very good this year. The ground ball rate's good. The strikeouts are okay. The peripherals are a little bit mixed on him. I don't think he has like Caleb Smith breakout or Lucas Giolito breakout coming, but I do think he should be owned in more than 32% of leagues. And I own him in a couple of 12 team points leagues. I started him in one this week. So yeah, he's definitely underowned.
Yeah. I think he's going to be likely a sub 4 ERA guy moving forward with pretty good strikeout numbers. And that's going to, I mean, you're probably not going to get many wins. That's true of everyone on the Marlins. And so that limits the ceiling. But I think he can be a top 60 or top 50 type of starting pitcher moving forward.
The Marlins do not have the worst record in baseball, it should be noted. The Orioles do. Would you rather have Lopez or, actually a decision I had to make yesterday, Zach Plesac?
Lopez.
Yeah, Lopez.
Okay, I had made the other decision. Plesac's still only 28% owned. Like if you started Devin Smeltzer or Chase Anderson in their two start weeks, you drop them and you pick up Lopez or Plesac, I'd say, right? Make that swap?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Would you rather have Pablo Lopez or Nick Pivetta?
Lopez.
Pivetta did actually make some interesting changes in this one start, but it was only one start. He actually, when he was behind in his count, he threw his fastball less than 50% of the time, which is, it's usually around 70% fastball usage when he's behind in the count. So that's a promising sign. I think they're very similar. I think Pivetta probably has a little more upside.
Are you going to pick one?
I just said Pivetta has a little more upside.
Okay.
That doesn't always mean that's the guy you go with.
No.
Yeah.
No.
No.
It, no.
Right? It doesn't.
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
Standouts for you guys? Who you got?
There were a lot last night. Like, I thought, felt like there were a lot of very important happenings in baseball. I'll start with Garrett Cooper, who had just a monster night at the plate and has actually been very good since the Marlins called him back up. And I wrote about it today. I think it's interesting because he was so good at AAA. His minor league track record, very good. He's had a lot of injury problems, has a pretty good batted ball profile, and makes enough contact. I think he's interesting as a corner infielder, and he's just 11% owned.
I have a segment called Miami Now Has Three Hitters with an OPS Over 800. And Garrett Cooper's one of them. Harold Ramirez is another one. He's batting 370 with a 109 ISO. One home run, no steals in 19 games for Harold Ramirez. A ton of singles.
I get mad every time I see Harold Ramirez's name in a box score because I see H. Ramirez and I think, yes, the Marlins brought Hanley back. This is going to be so much fun.
No, they haven't brought Hanley back. Home. No. Harold Ramirez hit well in AAA this year. He was a former top 100 prospect. He's got a little speed, but I don't think there's enough power there to be more than an NL-only guy. I do think Jorge Alfaro is a top 12 fantasy catcher in like a Mike Zunino kind of way. Like the Goodyear Mike Zunino. And I do think Garrett Cooper is interesting, you know, not in anything more than like a five outfielder league. I'm not even sure in like a 12 team league you should be adding him, but anything deeper than that, I do think there's pretty good contact skills and enough power.
Would you look at that graphic? Fishing for offense with a question mark? I mean, this is strong stuff. Our video team's really bringing it lately. Please watch our video, by the way. Go to www.youtube.com, search for CBS Sports, and you'll find our full-length shows. You can also see VODs on our website, www.cbssports.com. The three Marlins with an OPS over 800 are Garrett Cooper, Harold Ramirez, and Jorge Alfaro. And Cooper and Ramirez are widely available. Alfaro, I think, is 59% owned, and I think we've basically summed up the hitting stallions for today.
And then there was another hitter who had a pretty good game, but I did not realize how incredibly hot he had been. Ramon Laureano, who has been spectacular with the glove and the arm most of the year, but it kind of looks like his bat's starting to catch up a little bit. He homered and stole a base on Tuesday. He's got a 15-game hitting streak that includes 12 extra base hits.
Yes,
young enough and prospecty enough at 27% owned. At the very least, he should be owned in all five outfielder leagues.
But he was terrible before this streak. You know, the article that I read, the AP recap, said he had a 17-game hitting streak, and I didn't think that was true. So, Heath, thank you for confirming it is, in fact, a 15-game.
It might be 16. Maybe we're both wrong.
I think it's 15. It's good, and it's three home runs in his last five or six games, a ton of doubles for Laureano. So would you rather have Jay Bruce or Ramon Laureano?
Laureano.
Really?
I think I'd rather have.
If you just look at Laureano, what he's done in the major league so far, he's played 108 games. He's got a 274 average with 13 home runs and 12 steals.
Yeah, I suppose if you need steals.
How valuable is Kevin Kiermaier? Is he better than Kevin Kiermaier?
I think that there's. We haven't seen him fail as much as Kevin Kiermaier, right?
I don't think Kevin Kiermaier's failed that much. He just hasn't been able to stay. He has failed to stay healthy,
yes,
for sure. But
he's in nothing.
He's a pretty good player.
He's a jag. Well, I mean, when you factor in his defense, he's a very good player.
No. I mean, for fantasy, like if you look at like 150 game pace, and he never plays 150 games, but he's been like a 20-20 guy, I think.
Right, so, but it's like the least impactful.
I'm just not sure Laureano has much more upside than that.
Laureano had a 630 OPS before this hitting streak, you know, or 633 mm-hmm. OPS before the hitting streak. So that's
he had an 830 OPS last year.
Sure.
Okay. 27% own. Chris, I'm not going to let you do a standout. Sorry. We have time to talk about other players. We'll get to them later. Smooth transition. Injuries, news, and notes. Andrew McCutchen out for the season with a torn ACL. Pretty interesting where he ranked at the end of his season, 14th in points at outfield, 34th in roto. But just leading off for a great lineup, getting on base all the time, able to compensate for a low batting average, only two steals. So, you know, a good year for him in points leagues and roto leagues where it doesn't, where OBP doesn't count, you know, he was fine. So
It's tough. He was a very useful player. He was someone you didn't really have to think about.
That's true.
Sitting at any point.
Jay Bruce is, he started yesterday. He sat against the lefty. He started against the righty in his two games with Philadelphia. If you take a look at our video here, you've got sort of what's going on with the Phillies. Adam Haseley got called up. Scott Kingery, he can play the outfield. He played third base yesterday. Nick Williams was sent to AAA. And Roman Quinn is on the IL with a groin injury. So internally, what do you see the Phillies doing now with McCutchen out for this season?
I would think Scott Kingery plays pretty much every day somewhere. And he pretty much has been, I think, since coming back from the DL. He's capable of playing short, second, third, outfield. Haseley, from what I've been able to gather reading scouting reports, he's kind of like a fringy defensive center fielder, so not necessarily an upgrade over Kingery, the converted infielder. And I don't know if he has either enough pop or enough speed to really matter much for fantasy.
I would wager that it's more likely that he is back in the minor leagues than he is fantasy relevant.
Yeah, the one thing I will say, and we've talked about this a lot with prospects who come up who have a really good contact profile, and he, you know, 154 strikeouts in 223 games, career 293 hitter in the minors. I think you can probably say that's a good contact profile. Those guys tend to outperform expectations as far as power, but I still think you're probably looking at more of like an 18 to 20 homer guy over the course of a full season at his peak. And that just doesn't sound all that interesting. I think Kingery has more potential because he has the potential to be a power speed guy.
Okay, not so interested in Haseley. Interested in Kingery. He's 39% owned. And who's a better guy to speculate on right now, Kingery or Laureano?
I think Kingery. I think he has a more interesting profile for fans.
Heath's side.
Yeah. I mean, Laureano's probably been better over the last 2 years. But no. Kingery does have a lot more eligibility.
And Kingery's been better this season. I mean, it's been limited, but it's 92 plate appearances now, but 944 OPS. And, you know, a lot of the batted ball data does back it up, at least to a certain extent. You know, 291 expected batting average, 461 expected slug. That'll definitely play, and he's a guy who, you know, might have 25 to 30 steal potential.
Okay, trade targets that the Phillies could consider. Do you think maybe that they bring in an outfielder? I think Jim Bowden gave us some trade targets. Former GM who works for CBS Sports, and he's on HQ all the time. Make sure you're watching HQ. Kevin Pillar, Jerod Dyson, Yasiel Puig. That'd be fun. Billy Hamilton, Manuel Margot, Tony Kemp, Michael Taylor, and Delino DeShields, who started yesterday and stole a base. Maybe he's being showcased a little bit. So you know what? We don't have to do fantasy analysis here. Just keep an eye. Some of these guys might be on the move. The Phillies certainly could add an outfielder, and they probably need to at this point. Miguel Cabrera is going to DH exclusively due to some changes in his knee, and he DH'd yesterday and hit a grand slam off Blake Snell. Brian Dozier left after being hit by a pitch on the arm. Giancarlo Stanton hit in a simulated game. The Yankees apparently like Dallas Keuchel. Would that be a good or a bad landing spot for Dallas Keuchel?
I think it'd be fine.
Fine.
A lot of wins.
Not good.
Not the greatest park, but being a ground ball pitcher.
Right in the middle of the possible options.
Buster Posey could be back today. The Astros sent Corbin Martin to AAA. Framber Valdez is going to replace him in the Houston rotation. Your interest level in Framber Valdez?
6 in the interestometer.
Now, how does that correlate to the addometer?
That would be like a 3 on the addometer.
Okay.
I'm interested, like double of what the addometer would be.
So Plesac or Valdez?
I think Plesac.
I think so, yeah.
Okay, please, Zach, and thank
you. But I'd rather have Valdez than Smeltzer.
Right. Yeah, Smeltzer was pitching well yesterday, and I was kind of annoyed because I just like don't want to have to deal with picking him up because I didn't really believe in him. And then he gave up 4 home runs, and I was pretty happy. Or he gave up, I think, 3 more home runs. I was happy. Gregory Polanco has sat 2 straight games and 5 of Pittsburgh's last 11 games, so that is certainly something to keep an eye on with Gregory Polanco. It's getting harder and harder to be patient with him. Mets news, Jeff McNeil's off the IL. Dominic Smith pinch hit yesterday. He's not 100% healthy yet, but hopefully back in the lineup today. And Robinson Cano could be back any day, and I do think we got a serious logjam there with the way Dominic Smith was playing. Now McNeil led off yesterday. Todd Frazier's been good, so Cano should be back soon. We'll see what the Mets decide to do. Mickey Callaway apologized. Oh, that was so funny. I was watching that game, and they took out Noah Syndergaard, and Noah Syndergaard cursed like 7 times. And the cameras were just like, yeah, we know he's going to be dropping the F word here, and we'll just let it go. And the move backfired. They may have lost the game because of it. Mickey Callaway apologized for it, and his team seemed to actually sort of rally around him for doing that. Adam Jones,
They gave up 6 runs in the 10th inning.
Yeah, but they were blew the lead in that inning.
They would have been in the 10th if they'd left Thor in.
Probably true. I think that's true.
The bullpen pitched really well until the 10th inning.
In that inning, the run scored right after they took Syndergaard out. Like, he left with a runner on base. They took him out after 103 pitches, I believe, and 2 outs in the inning. They bring in a reliever, tie game. So that, you know, they probably lost because of that move. Adam Jones, he's on the worryometer. Adam Jones left with hamstring tightness. Wade Davis should be back soon. Alex Reyes has yet to be cleared to swing a bat, but he is still expected to start as a pitcher, maybe as soon as this weekend, Alex Reyes. Mitch Moreland could be back this week, and Hunter Dozier could be back in about a week as Hunter Dozier is on the injured list. Worryometer Wednesday, that's coming up right after this break here on Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be right back.
If you've ever been in the market for a new home, you know home shopping can be a lot. There's so much you don't know and so much you need to know. What are the neighborhoods like? What are the schools like? Who is the agent who knows the listing or neighborhood best? And why can't all this information just be in one place? Well, now it is on Homes.com. As somebody who's been through this, I can tell you these features are so, so incredibly valuable. They've got comprehensive neighborhood guides and detailed reports about local schools, and their agent directory helps you see the agent's current listings and sales history. The area you live in is just as important as the house itself. You can get to know a neighborhood without ever setting foot in it. Say you're a really active person. You could find out about the nearest parks. Do they have a baseball field? Maybe you want to join a softball league like Chris and I play in. Also, Homes.com collaboration tools makes it easier than ever to share all this information with your family. It's a whole cul-de-sac of home shopping information all at your fingertips. Homes.com, we've done your homework.
Such worry warts here on Fantasy Baseball Today, especially on Wednesdays. It's Worryometer Wednesday. I got 5 players, 4 of them pitchers. Here we go, 0 to 10. 0, not worried at all. No problem. 10, oh, huge problem. Be very concerned. Paul DeJong is first up, leading off on the worryometer. He is 3 for his last 40 with 5 walks to 12 strikeouts. That's not so bad, but no extra base hits. Yikes. 283 OPS in his last 11 games before going 1-for-4 yesterday. 0 to 10 on Paul DeJong.
I don't know what, I don't think anybody else should be worried about him because no one else thought he was actually as good as he was. Put him as a 3 because I did move him into my top 9 shortstops. And I've got a little bit of concern that he falls back into that 14 or 15 range. But the swinging strike rate really has, it's not like he just started swinging and missing a bunch.
I mean, his strikeout rate is up to 25% during this stretch, which is closer to where it had been before the start of this season. And I think.
But the swinging strike rate's below where it's ever been.
Okay.
Which is weird. During
this stretch?
Yeah,
9.7%.
Yeah, he's not striking out that much. I mean, for a crazy
slump.
No,
he's not striking out an alarming amount.
For a crazy
he's also not doing anything else.
No, it's been a bad stretch. I don't know why.
Paul DeJong is now 10th in points, 14th in roto at shortstop. What's so weird about Paul DeJong is that he's supposed to be bad in points and good in roto, but he's walking so much this year.
Well, what's really weird And he's had some luck in terms of how many runs he scored, and that's because he's not gotten on base for the last 2 weeks, kind of changed. But what's really weird is one of my reasons for liking Paul DeJong coming into this year is because he's hitting third in that lineup behind Carpenter and Goldschmidt. He's got 26 RBIs with like an 850 OPS hitting third behind Carpenter. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, it does when you consider how disappointing Carpenter and Goldschmidt have been, I guess. Does he bats third or he bats second? Yeah, I think you're right. He bats third,
both.
Right? Yeah, last four games batting second. Before that, batting pretty much third. All right, so did you give a number, Chris?
No, I would say 3 for the general population, 6 for Heath. I don't think he's taking like a huge step forward. I think most of his bad ball metrics suggest he's pretty close to who he's been. And now that the strikeout rate's regressing a little bit, I think my expectation for him moving forward is he'll be the guy he's been the last couple of seasons, and that's probably someone in the 12 to 15 range of shortstop moving forward.
So now that one of them is hot and one of them is cold, would you rather have Corey Seager or Paul DeJong?
I will stick with DeJong for now.
I think I would rather have DeJong still.
Okay, Gleyber Torres or Paul DeJong?
Gleyber.
DeJong.
Gleyber still has games against the Orioles left.
Not that many. Blake Snell is next up on the worryometer. 6 runs and 4 1/3. Okay. Not even a top 30 starting. 0, Chris?
If you were drafting him as one of the 6 or 7 best pitchers in fantasy, you should be a little worried because he's not been that. But I think he'll be fine moving forward. Yeah, I think he's going to be like a low 3 ZRA guy.
Yeah, I just want to say
2, 3.
Pretty much Blake Snell never goes more than 6 innings. Rarely goes more than 6 innings. He has 2 starts all year of more than 6 innings, no more than 104 pitches in any start. So that is interesting. Yep. So if you were redrafting today, when would you take Blake Snell, knowing that like best case scenario is probably like a 185 inning pace?
10?
5.
Noah Syndergaard. Look, it wasn't a bad start. He gave up 3 runs in 6 2/3. One of them with the bullpen gave up, as we already mentioned. But the strikeouts have been down lately. So he had 28. Well, let's do some math. 32 strikeouts now in 39 innings in his last 6 starts. That's weird. 0 to 10 on Syndergaard.
I'm roughly this. I'm 3, probably.
2.
Okay.
Maybe 3. Yeah. I have some actual concern about Syndergaard, but not much.
All right. Syndergaard or Zach Greinke?
Greinke,
yeah,
pretty easily.
Okay, Syndergaard or Hyunjin Ryu?
Hyunjin Ryu is the toughest pitcher to answer any question about right now, because what's the argument against him at this point? Like, on a per-inning basis, he's been the best pitcher in baseball for well over a year.
Today is my weekly rankings update day, and I have to each week decide, okay, how high am I going to move Ryu now? And I think I've settled on 12th at starting.
Yeah, like, what would be the possible case against him being a top 12 pitcher? I don't feel like that's right.
I've got a case. He has not thrown more than 126 innings since 2014.
Sure.
And but the strikeouts are down for Ryu now, too. He had 17 ground balls to 3 fly balls yesterday, but only 2 strikeouts.
I don't think the strikeouts might not be down that much because he has a 0.8 whip.
What do you mean?
Yeah, his K percentage is down slightly. He's facing because he's been so good, he's facing fewer batters per inning, which lowers the K per 9.
Okay.
His strikeout rate's down slightly, but it's still well above average.
Okay, but it's getting worse, I think. Like, he was striking out a lot more guys in April, and now in May and into the first start of June, Ryu kind of going back to before last season, he wasn't really a strikeout per inning guy. You know, Ryu seems to be back to that mode. I feel like it's getting worse.
I could make the argument for him as high. Like, the guys that I have him right behind that I don't necessarily, I don't think I can put him ahead of Greinke. Bauer and Strasburg, I'm really struggling with.
Yeah.
Why over Strasburg? I mean, Strasburg's been great. Other
than
Ryu's
been a lot better.
A lot better. And Strasburg was bad again last night.
No, Strasburg was bad last night. He had not been bad for a really long time. He was a top five starting pitcher going into last night.
Ryu's been better.
Maybe he wasn't not ranked that as much high better. Ryu is third in points and Strasburg is fourth in points. Now it is a pretty big gap. It's 21 points different. But I just want to bring that up. Like Strasburg got off to a bad start and he's actually one spot behind Hyunjin Ryu in points.
But Strasburg's probably made three more starts or two more starts.
Oh, I guess. That was going into yesterday. I apologize. Yeah. That was going into yesterday.
Yeah, so, I would imagine Strasburg's made at least two more starts because Ryu did have that IL stint.
Oh,
I think innings are the only concern with him.
60 points better than Strasburg. But Strasburg's still the number four starting pitcher in fantasy. Justin Verlander is the only guy ahead of Ryu. All right, let's move on, guys. Let's move on. Chris Paddock on the worryometer. Chris Paddock, three of his last four starts, pretty bad. I don't think, no matter what happens this weekend, if he pitches this weekend, I sometimes they move the rotation around. I'm not going to start him at Colorado next week, but 0 to 10 on Chris Paddock.
Six? Like, this is really three of his last four starts that have been subpar if the expectation is that he's a near ace. So I think as short as his track record is, his track record's dominant no matter where he's pitched, but as short as that track record is, three out of four a subpar starts is enough to get me worrying a little bit.
It's not just subpar. Yeah, I mean, they're really bad.
Yeah, I think it's more a sign that he's not quite an ace yet. You know, even on a per inning basis, which was what we might have hoped for. And I think, you know, a lot of us, myself included, I think expected. And so that's a disappointment. I think you're worried. You're like a seven if you thought, man, this guy's going to be, you know, Steven Strasburg level good when he's starting. That's probably not going
to
be.
Like, I think the guys you compare him to now, that I had him ahead of all of them last week. And that was before his most last two starts. Brandon Woodruff, Lucas Giolito, Mike Soroka.
Brandon Woodruff.
And I think I'd have to put him behind all those guys.
Well, for sure. I think Giolito for me would be, yeah. Yeah, Paddock, because Giolito goes like 7-8 innings, it seems like every start. Paddock, you really can't get that.
But again, we don't, like, Giolito has been phenomenal, and most of my worries about him are gone. But we don't, it's not like we have a longer history of Lucas Giolito being good than Chris Paddock. We've got much longer track record of pitching, but most of that he was bad.
But he's been better this season.
Yes.
Paddock, maybe you could say regression was coming. I would say the schedule got really tough. His bad starts have been at the Dodgers, at the Yankees, home against the Phillies. And he still has a 2.97 ERA. And he'll either be facing Washington this weekend, or if they bump him, you know, an extra day, which they do, he'll have San Francisco on the road in his next start, which would be preferable. Last guy on the worryometer is Max Fried. He now has a 3.68 ERA. This is two bad starts in a row. He settled in after giving up five runs, I think, in the first two innings. But, yeah, it's a little worrisome. Max Fried, 0 to 10.
I never moved Fried higher than 40 in my rankings. And so maybe that's why I don't feel as worried about him. But the thing that does concern me is, as recently as like 6 weeks ago, the Braves thought of him as their most likely long reliever. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know that it takes very many struggles. They've got like 18 arms in AAA that are ready to come take a shot at the majors. I don't know that his rotation spot's secure. I'll say five.
And he is a guy who hasn't exactly thrown a ton of innings. It looks like 128 is his high for a season. He's coming off 111 last year. So it's hard to say exactly how much longer he's going to go. I think he's probably more in the Pablo Lopez category.
Max Fried, okay. All right, that's the worryometer. Let's take another break here on Fantasy Baseball Today. When we come back, a lot of hitters. We're talking about a lot of hitters coming up. Guys like Yasiel Puig and Matt Carpenter, who homered yesterday. Francisco Lindor and Framel Reyes, who homered twice yesterday. Three outfielders, four outfielders if you include Ramon Laureano, but we already talked about him, that you might want to consider adding right now. That's coming up after this break on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Let's check in on some of the youngsters around Major League Baseball in a segment I like to call Checking In on the Youngsters. Chris, you're young. Do you want to lead this segment? You're like 24
I'm
or something.
31 years old, Adam.
You're young.
I'm like 3 years younger than Scott.
You're middle-aged.
I'm middle management. You know? Like, can we show some respect? I'm in my...
It's a compliment. For goodness sake.
Deep into my 30s.
Yeah, okay, fine.
Deep into my 30s.
You, by the way, Chris was defending Nickelback on Twitter last night. Checking in on the youngsters, Austin Riley.
Not untrue.
Yeah, Austin Riley, he has 4 walks this year. 3 of them have come in the last 7 games. That's cool. But he homered again. 9 homers. And I told you yesterday that he got off to the hottest start basically for any rookie joining Trevor Story and Carlos Delgado in the like super hot rookie start with terms of home runs. And both those guys, like Story, like I said, he was sort of saved by Coors Field. Delgado was terrible after his hot start. Riley just keeps on chugging. So, you know, maybe the best thing to do here is look at this group, right? There are 2 guys who are kind of waiver wiry, and that would be Clint Frazier and Kevin Biggio. So we'll separate them. I think Brendan Rodgers, by the way, at this point, you know, playing time's uncertain. The performance hasn't been very good. He didn't even make this cut. But not saying you should completely give up on him, but, you know. Riley Senzel. Nick Senzel, since debuting on May 3rd, is the number 8 second baseman in points, number 9 in Roto. Eloy Jimenez has been horrible. Victor Robles, I would say pretty droppable in points leagues, and he's 95% owned, so he's obviously owned in most points leagues. And Michael Chavis is super cold. Batting .233 with a .389 slugging percentage and 32 strikeouts in his last 28 days with only 5 extra base hits. So, all right, we got the guys I want to talk about right now. Riley, Senzel, Eloy, Robles, and Chavis. Heath, why don't you talk about this group as a whole? You know, who's looking good? Who's looking bad? What do you think going forward? Go ahead.
Well, I think Austin Riley is looking good, and I think Eloy Jimenez is looking bad. How's that? No, Nick Senzel has been really very solid, especially considering that he's second base eligible. And that maybe is one that's gone under the radar. I think everyone knows that Riley's been incredibly hot. And I think most of us can agree that he's not going to be this good. I agree with what Scott White wrote about him.
Twitter mentions do not agree with
I that. Agree with what Scott wrote about him. And Chris did make me think of Melvin Gordon.
What did he write? What did Scott write?
Scott wrote...
He's the ultimate sell high.
Ultimate sell high. And Chris and I, 3 years ago, called Melvin Gordon the ultimate sell high. Exact same words. And it's like, it's better during these moments for your mentions to just say nothing and wait. But we're here to try to provide guidance. And I would try to sell high on Austin Riley.
Yeah, like, this is one of those things where you realize how little nuance people actually want, because obviously Austin Riley isn't going to be as good as he has been moving forward. That should be uncontroversial. Saying he's a sell high candidate doesn't mean you're saying he's bad. It's just like Trevor Story after that first 14 games or whatever it was a pretty good fantasy option. He was like an 840, 850 OPS guy.
Yeah, but again, that was really thanks to Coors Field. Michael Chavis would be a pretty bad case scenario for Austin Riley, because Chavis at one point was the number one third baseman in fantasy since his call-up, and he's been pretty bad since then. you know, I don't, does Austin Riley go that route? It's possible with his plate discipline. I mean, it is possible right. that he just goes that route. I can't, he is the best sell high candidate in baseball, in fantasy baseball. But if you hang on to him, doesn't mean you're going to have a bad player.
I think like an interesting question, because they're both rookies. It's another youngster that Adam's not checking in on currently, but I'm going to pull him into the conversation.
Bring
because
him in.
I'm looking at my third base rankings. And if you had Austin Riley and somebody else had Vlad Jr., would you trade Austin Riley for
second.
Vlad Jr.?
In a second. I would rather have Vlad.
I think I would rather have Vlad. I'm not sure why you would make that trade.
Yeah, you should get something else, too.
In a categories league, I agree with you.
Actually, I'm not sure
in
that the
Vlad... In
a
points league, I think Riley could just be not worth starting in a points league once this little show ends.
I don't think that the Vlad owner would do that. Like, I
mean, Vlad's been downright bad, right? In terms of fantasy production?
On a scale of Austin Riley to Eloy Jimenez, he's been Vladimir Guerrero.
Right in the middle.
Which
there?
Is not Eloy Jimenez.
That told me absolutely nothing.
I know. He's not, I don't think he's been terrible. He hasn't lived up to the expectations we put on him. And, you know, like a 771 OPS is definitely not bad. And he appears to have a pretty low BABIP. So, no, I don't think you're too concerned about Vladimir Guerrero. He's clearly a more talented player than Austin Riley. That should be uncontroversial. And so I hesitate to say that I would do that trade just because I don't like trading position to position anyway. It seems like you have to really win that trade.
You
can't
do
just
better.
Like come out slightly ahead.
You can do better for Austin Riley. Because obviously, Vlad, there are concerns, right? He's a rookie. They're not long.
What about Manny Machado?
Yeah, I take Machado. You wouldn't?
We're going to have to really have a discussion about Manny Machado.
I'm not sure Manny Machado is good.
We've had a discussion.
Okay,
yes,
okay,
he's good.
Okay,
yeah.
Calm down.
We've had a discussion about Machado. I would take Machado over Riley. Would you?
I'm going to have to do some soul searching on my Manny Machado ranking this afternoon, because he's obviously a good baseball player, very good baseball player. He's got a 750 OPS. He's basically been a 750, 770 OPS guy away from Camden Yards most of his career. He's not running. I'm not sure he's a startable third baseman or shortstop in a 12-team points league.
The stolen bases, I think, are a key. Because you look back the last 365 days, he has 29 homers, 12 steals, 270 batting average. That's a starting caliber player, but once you start stripping away some of the stolen bases, if he's a 3 or 4 stolen base guy, and I think that's not due to ability. I think that's due to just the Padres don't want him running. Then things start to get a little dicier. I think I would still rather have him than Austin Riley, but I don't feel great about it. It would give me a lot of indigestion, and I would never make that trade.
Maybe I was a little too quick to say in a second I would rather have Vlad over Riley. I think if you're trading Riley, you need to do better than Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
What about Jose Ramirez?
Yeah, I would do it. I would.
See, I'm not sure Chris is selling high on Austin Riley.
Well, it's just I don't think that's selling high right now.
I think it's a buy low, sell high. I think you've got a chance.
You're trying to sell.
Yeah.
I just.
Well, what are you going to try to get? But, like, give me Ronald Acuna for Austin Riley. Like, you know.
Yeah. I would try to do that. Ronald Acuna is in the midst of a deep slump. If you're trying to sell high, that's what you try to do. Not Jose Ramirez, who hasn't been good in 5 months.
All right. If you want to aim higher, that's fine. But I would say, I guess I would just say, if I were ranking players rest of season, maybe I'm an idiot, but I would still rank Jose Ramirez ahead of.
I would too.
Austin
I just
Riley.
I don't think that I would try for something with less risk.
Okay.
And I think that's the point Scott makes in his column, is it's about mitigating the risk of Austin Riley, not necessarily just getting him off.
I just really can we just for the rest of the show just me throw names at Chris and put him in agony, because this has been like my favorite part of the show.
This is why I don't do rankings anymore. Like I had that choice and I decided not to do rankings.
That sounds like
such a
great choice.
I don't enjoy that process.
That is a
what
great
about Bryce
choice.
Harper?
I'd rather have Harper.
Okay.
Okay, so other youngsters, like, should Eloy Jimenez be 91% owned? Should Victor Robles be 95% owned?
Yeah, you got bench spots.
Those are the exactly the type of players that I would want to have on my bench, because I think that either could be really good. Eloy has not shown us anything that says that, other than his entire minor league pedigree.
Right. Michael Chavis, should he be 86% owned?
He's second base eligible, yes. Yep.
Clint Frazier, 68% owned. He homered yesterday after pouring his heart out to the media. And Kevin Biggio, 55% owned. Only one extra base hit, I believe. Is that? I'm not sure that's right. Might be right with Kevin Biggio. He hasn't been very good.
No.
Yeah, what do you think about Frazier and
Biggio?
I
don't think either of them are over-owned.
I think Frazier very shortly could be
the
most dropped player.
Well, yes, if Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge get healthy and Brett Gardner and Aaron Hicks stay healthy, but the odds of that happening are, like, for more than a week at once seems really low.
Nah, but he just can't play the field. So, you know, he's so bad. I think there's a chance he gets traded, though, and we'll see what kind of hitter he is. Okay, let's just kind of fly through some things from yesterday. Francisco Lindor and Franmil Reyes, double dongers. Thoughts?
They're good. Once Franmil Reyes' playing time looked like over the last couple of weeks, that's always going to be the concern for me.
Fairly
it's
consistent.
Not a concern about talent at all.
Fairly consistent. He's been an inconsistent player, but he plays a lot.
Yeah, if he's playing 85 to 90% of the games, I think he's a must-own in every categories league. I think he's... I have zero concerns about his talent. I think he's good.
I'm curious what we think his, like, true talent level BABIP is. Because he's got a sub-300 on base right now. And part of that's because he has a 244 BABIP, but he does sell out for power. So if he's a 270 guy, he might still be a guy that's going to hurt you in terms of walks to strikeouts.
Guys, can we go fast on this next segment here? Some outfielders that you might want to consider picking up. Avi Garcia, 56% owned. Avi Zael Garcia, 56% owned and having a really good year. Kyle Schwarber, 61% owned. Since becoming the leadoff hitter on May 16th, hasn't been quite as good as I thought. He's been number 20 in points, number 30 in roto at outfield. Batting .216, but with 6 home runs since May 16th and 12 walks. Ramon Laureano and Derek Fisher. Laureano 26% owned. Derek Fisher 7% owned for the Astros. He's been good. Do you see anybody who's under-owned here? Garcia 56%, Schwarber 61%, Laureano 26%, Fisher 7%.
Garcia and Fisher for sure, and I think maybe Laureano.
Yeah, I think Laureano should probably be closer to 40 to 45. I don't necessarily disagree that he may not have the upside for 3 outfielder leagues, but I have a hard time believing there are 60 outfielders people are starting that are better than him.
Yeah, and I think Fisher's someone you want to be using in a deeper categories league, and that should include more than 7% of leagues, at least until the Astros get healthy.
Can they get going? 3 hitters who have been really frustrating this year. Do you think they're going to snap out of their slump soon? Joey Votto, Yasiel Puig, and Matt Carpenter. Most likely to succeed. Or how about this? If you were just going to draft today, in what order would you draft Votto, Puig, and Carpenter?
Carpenter, Puig, Votto.
Votto, Carpenter, Puig.
Carpenter, Puig, Votto. Votto, Carpenter, Puig. All right, this bears. This requires some discussion then. Still Votto first, huh? Yeah, Chris? Votto last for Heath.
Yeah, I don't see any reason to take Yasiel Puig over Joey Votto. He's been as bad as Joey Votto has been, and he has been decidedly not good. Yasiel Puig has arguably been the worst player in baseball this season.
What? You guys said that about someone last week, and we got an email that pointed out that you did not talk about Danny Jansen. And as long as Danny Jansen is still playing, you can't talk about any hitters as being the worst.
Yasiel Puig...
Chris Owings also was still bad. He got cut and had the 12th worst weighted run created plus of any player in the last 12 years.
Yasiel Puig has 7 more home runs than Joey Votto, and he has 7 steals this year. I'd rather have Puig. Well, the thing is, I trust Puig more than Votto to turn it around.
Why?
Because he has a track record.
Excuse me?
And Votto's in, and Votto is no longer.
Excuse me? Hold on. What?
Votto is no longer in his prime. Votto is no longer in his prime. I think, like, this time last year.
The track record thing was bad. You're going to take that back, right?
No. Yasiel Puig has a track record of being a slow
starter.
So does
Joey Votto as
right, but like
Joey Votto's track record doesn't mean as much to me because I think he's over the hill.
Like, I like Yasiel Puig, but his track record is marked by inconsistency. And last year he was good for 2.5 months. Like, he was an abject disaster. I got stuck between two words.
Yeah. Last year?
For the first 2 months. Yeah, for
right.
the first two
he's
months.
He's a slow
of the
starter.
Season.
That's his track record. I'm not saying I have total.
We said the same thing for
this,
Votto.
This is more like about. This is more to me about. I don't really have much faith in Joey Votto anymore, especially with the power.
That's how I feel too. Just don't cite track record.
Well, I think that the track record of Puig being a slow starter, and the fact that he still runs and homers a little bit, gives me more faith in him than Joey Votto, who I just kind of think is done. I think he's.
But I do think in Roto, Puig has been considerably better than Votto.
Sure. I don't doubt that because of the stolen bases and the home runs, but there's a lot. I mean, fine. Like, I don't think it's a huge difference, but I don't see much reason to be much more optimistic about Yasiel Puig than Joey Votto.
I was more like I kind of understood why you would put Votto ahead of Puig. Because Votto was one of the best hitters in baseball over the last decade.
I
was more worried about you putting Votto ahead of Carpenter.
That's the one that I decided on at the last minute, and I can absolutely make a case for Carpenter over Votto. I think that's a good point.
Something I've noticed for Carpenter, though, is that he has sat against three of the last four lefties they've faced. He's actually been better against lefties this year, and those four lefties, I mean, the Cardinals did not face a lot of them, but we just haven't really noticed it because it's been spread out, but that's actually a huge deal. I don't think he's going to sit against lefties. But I'd like to see. I don't know the next time they face a lefty. Might be tonight for all I know. I really like to see if you're sitting there going, should I buy low on Matt Carpenter? I think we need to know if he's going to play against left-handed pitchers. I suspect he will, but I do need to mention that three of the last four lefties they've faced, he's been on the bench. All right, we sort of ran out of time today. We have about 4 minutes left. So let's go through some pitchers. Rotation part one. Okay, rank them. Strasburg, Ryu, Castillo, Bieber, Hendricks. Hendricks with another great start. Strasburg, Ryu, Castillo, Bieber, Hendricks.
I believe Hendricks had one fewer swinging strike last night than his career high.
No.
He's been awesome for a while, but I think he's probably last among this group. I'll go Ryu, Strasburg, Castillo, Bieber, Hendricks. I think Bieber and Hendricks is close.
Yeah, I'll go this. I have not decided between Strasburg and Ryu. I literally have to make that decision today, but I think that there's a couple of tiers here. Strasburg and Ryu are aces, and they're in the ace tier. Mm-hmm. Castillo and Bieber, for me, are still in the almost ace tier, but they're at almost the very top of it. And Hendricks is inching into that, but a little below those guys.
Castillo, the walks have been weird. A problem.
Yeah.
Weird. I mean, they haven't really been a problem yet.
They should have been.
But yeah, his walk rate is really high.
He's, and I haven't checked this in the last two starts, but he is kind of one of those guys that we all thought was going to have a breakout year. He's been outstanding, and so we're kind of ignoring the fact that he's also been really lucky.
Yeah, he should probably have more like a mid-3s ERA, and his walk rate is up to 11.8%. Which is nearly double what it was last season. So
interesting. Strange for Castillo. But you still think he's in the, near ace tier. So it's not like he's a sell high where you're waiting
I think
for him
he
to
is
implode.
Sell high.
It's got to be for an ace, though.
Yeah, but there are lots of struggling aces that I still have ahead of him. Nola, Syndergaard, that whole group of guys that we had in the ace tier that have fallen. They've not fallen behind Castillo for me, and for a lot of people they have.
Yeah,
I'd absolutely sell Castillo for all.
I would go get Nola for him, for sure. Yeah.
Rotation part two. And we might really just have to give names here, guys, and sorry about that. We're a little behind time today. Tanaka, Bumgarner, Frankie Montas, Griffin Canning, Eduardo Rodriguez, and Wade Miley. All these guys owned in more than 80% of leagues. Tanaka, Bumgarner, Montas, Canning, Rodriguez, Miley.
Bumgarner really testing that theory of if you get a quality start every single time you pitch, but also go six innings and give up three runs, are you a good pitcher?
Six innings, that's basically just what he does. Every time he pitches, it's six innings. It's crazy.
And it's just about always either three, somewhere between two and four runs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He has 405 ERA.
He's not, like, he's fine.
I think he's probably the best pitcher of this group moving forward, but I don't think it's a big gap. I'd probably go Bumgarner, Montas. Tanaka versus Canning is really interesting. And even Miley in that discussion, I think, is really interesting. But I think Bumgarner and Montas for sure are my top two in this group.
Bumgarner, Montas, and Tanaka are the only three that I'm certain are going to be must-own rest of season.
That's it for today's episode of Fantasy Baseball Today. Thank you for listening, everybody. When we come back on Thursday's show, we will have some trade talk for you. Buy low, sell high, buy high. Chris is filling in for Heath, so Chris, you have to do a little bit of homework tonight. You have to get some trade candidates going, and you get to make fun you get to make fun of Scott when he doesn't have any trade candidates when we start the show. Thank you to Creef. Thank you all for listening. I'm Adam Azer. Talk to you on Thursday on Fantasy Baseball Today.